Oh, hello and welcome to Thursday's podcast.
Yes. Today we figure out and calculate an important statistic. Mika Brzezinski tells us that Joe Biden shouldn't be in trouble for all of his inappropriate touching. Because, first of all, who cares? We all know we should never believe women. I think that was the hashtag that was used during Kavanaugh.
Almost is what she said.
Yeah, basically what she said. We shouldn't believe her because Joe Biden's hugged 10 million people in his life.
You know, the great thing about working with Stu is he loves to figure out problems using math. And we get into that.
We've kind of developed a Biden hug-o-meter to figure out how often he'd need to hug per day to get to 10 million hugs.
It's a lot.
We also talked to you about the new theory with Game of Thrones, in which they're very worried, apparently, that they're wiping out immigrant populations on Game of Thrones. It's a big problem.
Yeah, it is white privilege city. You know what? So is universal health care in Vermont and modern monetary theory. We'll explain those. It'll blow your mind what's coming.
And you can watch this big special that happened Wednesday night about socialism, called Socialism, A Warning from the Dead. It's available for free on YouTube and Facebook. Just go to Glenn's pages. You'll see them there. I would also recommend, if you want to see long-form, really deep dives and investigations like this in the future, we'd really encourage you to subscribe if you're able. If you go to blazetv.com/Glenn, you can save $20 by using the code GB20OFF. Depending when you're listening to this, it's only coming up to the end of Thursday. So it's Thursday night is the deadline for that. It's $20 off, though. If you ever wanted to subscribe, not only to get Glenn, Mark Levin, Stephen Crowder, Ali Stuckey, Chad Prather, Graham Allen, and so many more, this is a great time to do it. Save $20 off today only at blazetv.com/Glenn. The code is, of course, GB20OFF.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
If Karl Marx were just alive today, he would be so happy. I mean, to see these crazy, wacky ideas that, he was probably smoking dope and being like, what else we should say? I mean, he would be so thrilled that, everything is being paraded around right now. I can see him sprawled out on his hammock from REI, fiddling around, with the looking for the last vegan potato chip in the bag as he binge watches the Academy Awards on his 70-inch smart TV. I mean, it would be great. He'd be watching TV, but he would be glancing down on his iPhone 10. He's got a massive Twitter following in my dream world. He writes a line or two from time to time on Twitter about oppression and the have-nots. It's part of his job, working for Google. But his house is loaded with fresh products by all of the woke companies. He'd be so thrilled, all these woke companies. He would be like, man, I got to have Starbucks. They're wide awake. And he loves their soy milk. He's got Ben and Jerry's in the freezer. He tells everybody if he shaved, he would definitely use Gillette. But even though he says they stand for the have-nots, really, Karl Marx would be using the Dollar Shave Club because it's cheaper and higher quality. But secretly, he loves Chick-fil-A. He buys all of his comic books off of Amazon. Truth is, he really didn't ever think that people would really try this whole socialism thing. He'd be like, this is crazy. It's crazy, but I'm all for it. Hang on, I got to order something else from Amazon. Companies that have adopted a form of socialism is now called woke capitalism. And they use their status as corporations to spread a socialist message and encourage people to do their part in social justice. But as we learned last night on television, the co-opting of these companies is all part of a master plan that can flip a country overnight. And, just the idea of these companies, using socialism for an advertising campaign. I mean, think of that. Just think of that part. Using socialism as part of an advertising campaign. I mean, that is as ridiculous as a donkey in a prom dress. I mean, do people really think at some point, yeah, I'm going to take this donkey to the dance? And that doesn't happen. How is this all happening? This is a joke. How is no one bursting out in laughter? How far is this going to go? Because that donkey turned you down for the prom. The donkey's not going. It would rather poop in its stall and eat hay than go, you know, spike the punch bowl with you. Why? Because even the damn donkey in the prom dress knows that this is a death cult. That's what this is. This is a death cult. Listen to this. This is from the Alabama senator. I don't know his name. I don't think people in Alabama even know his name. But he stood up in the well of the Senate, and he was talking about how important abortion is, you know, for the children. Listen to this.
All I'm saying to you, it ought to be a woman's choice. I'm not about to be as a male tell a woman what to do with her body. She has the right to make that decision herself. To rape the incest. Some kids are unwanted. So you kill them now, I kill them later.
Oh.
You bring them in the world unwanted, unloved. Then you send them to the electric chair. So you kill them now, I kill them later.
Okay. So here's what he just said. You know. Let me just tell you this. Some kids are unwanted, and so you kill them now or you kill them later, because you bring them into the world and they're all unwanted, and then you put them in the electric chair. So you kill them now or you kill them later.
Did he turn into a Southern sheriff?
I'm not sure what movie he comes from, but it's a death cult movie. It's a movie that we all go, boy, I don't want to live around that guy. And yet, this is a senator in Alabama, and he's just talking about life as, look, you're going to throw him in an electric chair later, so kill him. Don't even give them the chance to not end up in an electric chair.
Well, we're all going to die eventually, so should we just make murder legal?
Right.
Like, I mean, they're going to die of old age or cancer or something later on.
So why not?
Why not stab them now?
It's a death cult. It is a death cult. If you don't believe me, and you don't believe that people are going crazy, they have gone over the cliff, let me play Chris Cuomo. Here's Chris Cuomo on Antifa.
And talk about Antifa, I've watched them in the streets protesting in different situations, okay? There are certainly aspects of them that are true to a cause. That is a good cause. They want social justice. They want whatever they want in that context.
Stop.
Of course.
So he's watched them protest. I don't think I've seen them protest. I've seen them riot. I've seen them throw things, you know, like Molotov cocktails. I've seen them break glass and store. I don't think I've seen those peaceful protests where they're like, hey, we're carrying signs. I am a man. I haven't really seen that one. I haven't seen that one. But here he is saying, This is a group that has a good cause.
Typically, when you have a good cause, you don't need to cover your face with a black mask.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, Stu. You generally don't need to do that. But let me give you a story from the FBI. Antifa activists tried to buy weapons from a Mexican drug cartel to stage an armed rebellion at the border. Help me out. How is this not a death cult? You know, Antifa in, I think it's Austin, not a problem with Facebook. They can post this all they want. They were looking just a couple of months ago. It's probably still there. They were looking on Facebook for people who wanted to start an Antifa militia to be able to act with force when the time comes necessary. Okay? Nobody has a problem with that? Facebook, you don't have a problem with that? Can you imagine if I said, hey, you know what we need? We need some armed guards, you know, just in case things get hinky. We're going to have our own militia so we can go out on the streets. That's insanity. That's a death cult. And the media is going right along with it. Remember when I said, Really, you don't have to do anything special. You don't have to be a hero. You really don't. You don't have to be. When you think of Martin Luther King, or you think of Gandhi, or you think of Jesus, he's probably the best example. You're like, he's the Son of God. You know, it's cool and everything, but I don't see myself on a cross going, hey, forgive them. But he's the Son of God, so I know he says we should do that, but I'm having a hard time seeing that. When it comes to being a hero in today's world, it's really super simple. Hey, let's not kill children. Hey, the guys in the masks, they seem like bad guys. Maybe we shouldn't support them. You know, little things like that. No, this is not a death cult. They protect women, all women, all women, all women have a right to be heard. And no matter what, you are causing injury right now with your words. Your words are violence against me. That's what they really believe, right? Here's Mika on women.
You know, I really think sometimes we got to get out of New York, get out of Washington, get out of the big cities, think about what the questions are you want to ask a major candidate in terms of their candidacy for president. The amount of time that was spent on Biden's hugs. This is a guy who has hugged 5 to 10 million people, and they love the fact that he's touchy and huggy, and they run to him. And five women are uncomfortable with the way he hugged them. And say, one of them says, she smelled his hair. I can promise you, I know Joe Biden. He went up behind her, and he took a deep breath because he was about to go on stage. I want to explain that.
It's funny
because
say,
there's a woman who accuses him of smelling her hair. He's not interested in your hair. Okay, he was going on stage and he took a deep breath before he went on stage, and you took it deeply personally, and now you're writing a New York Times op-ed about it demanding an apology. This, once again, is completely ridiculous, and the rest of America thinks it's ridiculous too. I'm done. You guys can continue to talk about this. I won't. I refuse to give it any more time.
Okay.
What about a woman telling her truth?
That's right. What about a woman having to be believed? We must believe women. No. This is a death cult. And it doesn't matter. If you step out of line, you're done. You're done. And God forbid that you are not diversity, that you just don't have any diversity. God forbid that you're just white. Because we don't need that kind of diversity. We don't need all the colors. White is not a color. It's not a color. So, white doesn't matter. This is the latest from Ilhan Omar. Listen to this.
This is not going to be the country of the xenophobics. This is not going to be the country of white people.
Tell us what our country
is,
please.
This is not going to be the country of the few. This is the country of the many.
Unless you're white. Unless you believe in the sanctity of life. Unless you believe, you know what? I believe in the individual. I'm not going to put everybody in a class. I'm not going to say, how much do you make? Okay, I know who you are. Tell me your heritage. Oh, yeah, I know who you are. This is a death cult. And just like all death cults, they're crazy as hell. All you need to do is put some white sneakers on these people, because they're already telling you when we're going to die. They're already telling you it's 10 years away. If I came on the air and said today, in 10 years, Jesus is coming, there would be countdown clocks and I would be mocked and laughed out. Especially, would I have any credibility at all if I had told you 15 years ago that by 2012, Jesus would be here. Jesus is going to be here by 2012. And then when I got to 2012, I said, well, no, he's not coming yet. And then when I got to 2019, I said, well, we have 12 years. And then just a couple of months later, I said, no, it's 10 years. Would I have any credibility? Would I, anybody in my death cult, everybody would shrug and go, you know what, they can wipe themselves out. If they all take suicide tablets, it's okay. Because they're just too dumb to be alive. That's what this is. And America, it doesn't, all you have to do is not go over the cliff with everyone else. Just refuse to play along.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and if you like what you hear on the program, you should check out Pat Gray Unleashed. His podcast is available wherever you download your favorite podcast. Wow, I am so disappointed in Game of Thrones, and so is Kyle Munzenreiter. He wrote for Yahoo News that he and the Munzenreiter family are very upset because...
did he say the whole family was upset? Or
yeah,
was it just
the
him?
Whole Munzenreiter.
Okay.
They're very upset because he thought that Game of Thrones was going to have something to say about the topic of immigration and the introduction of new populations. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't know. When one of the banners is a guy who is upside down and they're flaying him, I don't know. I'm not looking for any really big social meanings coming from these people. They're barbarians.
And my understanding of the series, which is in effect limited, I would admit.
Yes, it is.
The people in Game of Thrones aren't exactly people you're supposed to look up to for their virtue. Right
there. No, there's many of them are. There's maybe two. There's maybe two in there, and even even those guys are sketchy. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But they're trying to be good people.
Right.
All right. Everybody else is like, kill him.
Right. Like, there's been how many murders in this show? And you're worried about their stances on immigration?
Yeah. No,
like,
it's not even murders. It's not even murders.
Torture.
Yeah, they're feeding people alive to dogs, okay? This is not something... They literally, one of the characters had been tortured for almost like a half a season. Tortured, like nailed to a big cross, like an X. And then they skinned him alive. They cut parts of his body off. Tortured this guy, okay? And we're looking for moral... Really? You're looking for... These guys are going to have... You know, there's a good lesson there.
Did he... Did what was the family again? I'm sorry.
Which?
The family in... Oh,
the... this is the Munzenreiters.
The Munzenreiters family.
Munzenreiter.
Did he write an article previously of, I really have an issue with the Game of Thrones stance on torture,
no,
where they're torturing everyone
no.
for seasons at a time?
Well, listen to him, because he makes a very good point.
Okay.
Where once it seemed like Game of Thrones had something to say about the topic of immigration and the introduction of new populations in the staid old continent of Westeros. Mr. Munzenreiter, I don't know if you know, Westeros is fake. Okay?
Well, maybe we haven't looked hard enough for it.
Well, could be. because they're now trying to burn up entire ethnic groups, revealing that Game of Thrones only introduced them in the first place to populate its numerous bloodbaths.
Oh,
yes!
Yeah. I mean,
yes! Yes!
That's why people are watching the show.
Right, I don't know.
Now, there's a commentary there that's a little bit interesting.
One of us is missing something, and I don't think it's me. Entire peoples with proud, interesting heroes have been given the send-off. Well, they're real. They're not entire peoples with proud, interesting histories. They don't exist. Okay? It's a TV show.
So stupid.
Game of Thrones. Listen to this. Munzenreiter. Game of Thrones first started teasing that it had something big to say about the human costs of the idea of borders with the wildlings, or as they preferred to be known, the free folk. The group was hated by many of those in Westeros simply because they had been hated for years. It was tradition, While, of course, we know now there was actually a very good reason why that wall had to go up in the first place. Most of the characters in the show didn't believe that White Walkers and other assorted supernatural threats beyond the wall actually existed. I bet you Munzenreiter is not a guy who believes in God. Okay, listen to him. He's saying, well, you know, that's because they didn't believe, there were so many people that didn't believe in the supernatural. I mean, you know, there's a really good reason. It wasn't hate. Listen to this. It wasn't hate. It was their lack of belief in the supernatural. Oh. Again, I think you're missing something. One of us is, and I don't, again, think it's me. While, of course, we now know there was a good reason the wall had to go up in the first place, most of the characters didn't believe that the White Walkers and other supernatural threats beyond the wall existed. Most of them had come believed that the wall was simply there to keep the free folk out. The show then spent several seasons humanizing the free folk, tracking the peace, and eventually came to the peace that they came to with the Northerners, and exposing centuries of old bigotries.
Oh my gosh,
this is unreal. They're not centuries of old bigotries. It was a guy. It was a fat guy. Probably in his underpants behind a typewriter or his computer typing this in just a few years ago. There are no centuries of bigotry.
You should be thrilled to find this out. I mean, you thought these poor people were being crushed and their dreams dissolved, and yet in reality they didn't have any dreams because they're not a thing. Does this not fall into the life of the old phrase we used to use back in the day of just get a life?
Yes.
That's really all it is.
If this is
your life, and you're upset at the statements Game of Thrones is making about immigration, I mean, these poor, you know, people say snowflakes all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's like an overused term. We get it. But like, can you imagine if these leftists had to deal with what conservatives deal with? Every show says your values are horrible. Every show tells you that what you believe is the worst thing on the planet. They're all designed to tell you
crippled.
How awful you are. And we still sit here and be like, it was a good show, even though they told me yeah. that anyone who doesn't believe in abortion should be murdered. But I mean, it was a good show.
Right.
And like, we have to deal with this all the time. We don't cry about it and write op-eds about the disappointment you have in the series.
It is amazing to me. This is just amazing to me. Think of this guy's life, how privileged this guy's life really is. He goes on to say, the show spent several seasons humanizing the free folk and exposing centuries of old bigotries as nonsense. Indeed, some of the biggest, purest romantic storylines on the show were between free folk and the Westeros citizens. It wasn't hard to see the show grappling with what Westeros would look like after it came to recognize the free folk as equals.
What? I'm listening.
Nobody's,
I have no. Not only do I not understand his point, I still don't understand any of the characters. So it's really hard.
What would it look like? Would there be an eighth kingdom, a spot on the small council? In some ways, the show still might attempt that, but it's not like that many free folk are left to even work with. This is insane. Now, I'm surprised he didn't go here, but he could have gone to where I immediately thought. When I saw this, I thought, of course they send the minorities. Of course they send not the free folk in, because they're all white. They're all from the north. Who do they send in first? They send in the minorities from a distant land. That's who they send in. And then who's second? Oh, I don't know. The Unsullied. Oh, those were the slaves that you freed. Really? And all the white people ran to the castle. That's the real injustice. That's the way white people will do you every time.
We know that from Barack Obama's book, which was a book almost as good as the Game of Thrones series.
It's just almost as much fiction as Game of Thrones.
Yeah. It's one thing to make a fun point tying it to pop culture. I mean, everybody does that. I think that's an okay thing. But I just... This idea that it seems to really bother these people, like Elizabeth Warren, I sent this to you because I just still don't understand what any of it means. She wrote an op-ed for New York Magazine called The World Needs Fewer Cersei Lannisters.
Yeah, Cersei Lannisters.
Cersei Lannisters.
Yeah.
And she writes about how you need more Daenerys Targaryenus. Targaryen.
I'm not going to correct you. I'm going to just...
The point is, whatever she's saying here is...
Yeah.
It's such a pathetic attempt to pander to everyone.
You know,
we need more powerful women. This fictional show that happens to be at the top of the ratings proves it. She's so transparent. She makes me cringe with everything she does on the campaign.
So,
unlike any of these other candidates, Elizabeth Warren has this cringe factor that it's almost overwhelming.
You know what? Hang on just a second. I'm going to grab me a beer.
Just you saying
it.
Oh,
hi, honey. Hi, honey. My husband just walked in. I'm having a beer for the first time in quite some time. But that's what we do. We have me some beer. Anyway, go ahead. You were saying she's
so transparent, and it's so cringy.
Uh-huh.
And
look, here's the thing. Here's honestly the thing. Okay. And I actually heard a comedian say this the other day, and it's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. We are not meant to know this many people. We're just not meant to know this many people. We're not supposed to know this many people. Right now,
are you meant to hug 5 to 10 million people?
No, you're not.
No? Okay.
You. There were people in our life that were just working at the convenience store. They were the gas station, or they were the doorman, or your next door neighbor. That you'd just be like, "Hey, Bill." You didn't know anything about Bill. Okay, he lived three doors down. He was a neighbor that would always wave to you. All you knew about Bill is, hey, is Bill, the guy who lives a couple doors down, is he dead? Because I haven't seen him for a while. Okay, that's all we knew about.
Yeah.
Now with Facebook, we know everything about Bill. And the reason why we didn't know about Bill before is because Bill is freaking nuts. Bill is in his house going, you know what? Let me tell you about these bastards of Game of Thrones. And you immediately go, I don't want to know any more about Bill.
Yeah, you actually are aware of more things about people, but you want to know less people.
Yes, because that's the way we're built.
Because people are awful. Let's be honest about it.
We're supposed to just know a few people because there's only a few people you need to know.
Yeah.
Because you become a homicidal maniac if you start to know everything about everybody. You're like, I am surrounded by crazy people.
You know who had this right? The documentary The Village. They moved out into the middle of a field.
No, actually, I think this is...
And they only knew the people around them. And
can I tell you something?
And let me tell you, I'm a little disturbed at what they were doing with immigrant populations, but we'll get into that later.
Let me tell you something. I would move to The Village tomorrow.
I need the bathrooms.
I don't go back to the 1800s.
Right.
There's nothing beyond the wall except monsters.
Build an intranet.
Right.
Around so the people in your little community of like 50 people can talk to each other. You can go on. You can look at the sports scores of whatever team is there because the other two people that you know.
Well, you know what's crazy is in the movie Village, they had to lie to their children and say they were monsters. No, I just...
Go on the internet.
I just say... we have a live webcam on was on the other side of the wall. Look, kids, they're monsters on the other side of the wall. Don't go out.
Just show them the Democratic primaries.
That's all you have to do.
Don't go out there. That's what people are like out there.
That's what their leader is like. Don't do it.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
You know, Ocasio-Cortez and Sanders have been silent on Venezuela. And now the left is starting to say that the United States caused all of this suffering. It is absolutely insane what's going on. This is a socialist nation. Everybody knows that because everybody from Hollywood was down there talking about how great socialism is. Then Maduro, as always happens with real socialist countries, you have to understand Sweden, Denmark, all of that, Canada, they're not socialist. They have socialized aspects, but they are not a socialist country. As we learned last night, direct democracy is one of the key factors. It's why you're seeing right now this big push to get rid of the Electoral College. If you want anything, if you're like, what can I do? Here it is. Work really hard to stop the Electoral College from being changed. Direct democracy is made to sound like a good deal, but that is the number one. It's actually number two on the list. First is grab the culture. Culture's gone. Number two is direct democracy. And that's what we're in that phase right now. And once they have that, then, well, you have things like Maduro, because the people vote. And all you have to do is bribe people, twist people's arms. He was doing all kinds of things. He ran out of people's money. So what did he do? He had to rig the election. Now, Guaido, who is the recognized president, the recognized winner, this is not a coup. He was the recognized winner by the international community because there was such corruption. And now we see Guaido yesterday trying to, and last two days, trying to take the power from Maduro. But it looks like Jason Buttrell is with us. Jason, it looks like it's over.
I mean, it has the appearance, if you watch the official state media, which is something that, again, that's one of the crucial things that the opposition has to do. They have to find some way to get their voice out to the people.
How do they do that? Isn't the headquarters of the state media now at the palace?
Yeah, and they're making a whole lot different. I mean, I've talked about this before, but it's really important on movements such as this. And the perfect example was in Turkey when they attempted their failed coup. Mm-hmm. But the first thing they did was they got the military. They got the military behind them. Mm-hmm. That's something, again, that this opposition doesn't really seem like they have right now. But once you get the media, once you get the financing that you need, which the international community, including us, that's why we're shutting down banks internationally. That's why we're helping them get most of the country's assets in the hands of the opposition mm-hmm. in Guaido. Because if they don't do that, then the movement's dead on arrival. Mm-hmm. But the third important step is seizing some kind of media. Because if you can't give the appearance that, hey, this is going well, nobody wants to join, because they think they're going to be the ones that are on the left on the opposite side mm-hmm. if Maduro wins, and yeah. they're all going to, and they would all inevitably probably get killed
is happening to Guaido? He can't be killed or thrown in prison, can he? The international community would go crazy.
That's one of the biggest reasons I think why Maduro hasn't moved against him. Now think about what Maduro has seen him do. He's seen him. Guaido was actually leading the forces that were going to attack that Air Force base a couple of days ago. He was out there leading the forces. So he does have, you know, some blood on his hands already on this. But if Maduro just goes straight after him, then the United States, Maduro's fearing, will retaliate in some way. But also that, but you just martyred a guy. You martyred a guy that has tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people that he can call upon to march in the streets. You kill that guy, then that could be the final push that makes them march on the palace to take the media, to take everything else.
We have to pray for the people of Venezuela. They're just trying to get their republic back. Remember, it's really critical that you understand a representative republic. It is not a democracy. Direct democracy is a death knell. Our founders were so clear on this, because then it's just mob rule. Then it's 50%. If you can get 50%, well, then you got it. Well, that's not what we do. We protect the underdog. And what they're trying to do is just make sure that the underdog has no chance. That's direct democracy.
You pointed out last night in your special, that was what the communists in the Soviet Union that were trying to take over these countries legally, they called direct democracy the revolutionary tool of the movement. The revolutionary tool.
There were five things that we lined out in the special last night that had to happen. Four of them are done. One is in the last stages, and that is direct democracy. If we didn't have the Electoral College, it would already be done. We are that close to losing the country. And if you're looking for something to do, that's the fight you need to get into. We are not a democracy. We are a republic, a representative republic. And we have all of these rules for a reason. And it is, honestly, to slow mobs down. Our founders studied other governments. And they studied, why did they succeed? Why did they fail? Democracies always fail because it becomes mob rule. And because somebody can get in there and then just take control. And that is exactly what the socialists are now trying to do. By the way, if you missed this special last night, not only is there, I mean, a good 90 minutes of just solid information that I just, you're not seeing anyplace else. We make the case that I think is really important, and we do it without hyperbole. We are not, you know, well, they're all commies. We show you what they're actually saying behind the scenes. So they can tell you anything. Oh, I'm not against capitalism. But we'll show you what they're actually saying and what they're doing and the seeds that they're planting. The New Green Deal is one of them. And we show it to you historically. We compare it to what the Soviets did to Czechoslovakia. And there is a pattern to this. You want to flip a country, you can flip it in 3 years. They did with Czechoslovakia, 3 years. Now, it's taken longer because we have 250 years of freedom behind us. But we are close. We are really close. But at one point, you know, about 2 hours into it or an hour and a half into it, I start talking about things that we can do and where do we find hope. I want to give you just a little piece of that from last night's special. You can find it on my Facebook page, on YouTube, and, of course, if you're a subscriber, at blazetv.com. Listen.
We must stand firm for and further the cause of individual sovereignty, justice, individual justice, and individual dignity. Social justice of the 1850s has been perverted intentionally into collective justice of today, and it is a lie, it is evil, and it is bloodthirsty. The Founding Declaration words are worth dying for. But more importantly, they are worth living for. And live we must. Socialism, collectivism, authoritarianism, I don't care what you call it, it's a death cult. But it will not and cannot be beaten by fighting hate with hate or lies with more lies. We will not survive if our goal is just to change men's minds or to win. We must change men's hearts, including our own. There is no winning when half the country feels like they've just lost. But here's where we've gone wrong. We don't think we have anything in common, but we do. No one crosses an ocean in a rickety wooden sailboat for months. Nobody risks their lives in a homemade raft to cross the Gulf to get to Florida or send their children to cross a dangerous river in the middle of the night with dangerous coyotes because of our GDP or our low unemployment rate or even, yes, blessed universal health care. People don't come here for that. They come here for the American idea. For most of the world who are currently praying for us, please, America, wake up. We still are the shining city on the hill. They can see it. Perhaps we've grown so accustomed to freedom's lamp that we no longer turn around to even notice the flame that lights the world's path. Yes, this is a place that sometimes sucks. This is a place that sometimes you get rich, sometimes you don't. This is a place where if you work hard, play by the rules, and build your own mousetrap, sometimes you can live the life you design. Perhaps you'll even become rich. But when we look at the entire population of the entire earth, even the poorest among us in America are the wealthiest 1%. But even this argument is missing the point. That is a uniquely spoiled, entitled, and American way of looking at things because people do not escape oppression to come here to get rich. They come here to be free. And at this hour, at least at this hour, we still are.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
3.5 years after then-Governor Pete Shumlin of Vermont signed into law a vision for the nation's first single-payer health system, his small team was still struggling to find a way to pay for it 3 years in. With a deadline bearing down, they worked through a frozen mid-December weekend, trying one computer model Friday night, another Saturday night, and yet another Sunday morning. If they kept going, the governor asked his exhausted team on Monday, could they arrive at a tax plan that would be politically palatable? No, they said. No, they could not. Now, remember, this is a state where everybody wants to do this. Okay, this is a state that decided we're going to do a single-payer tax plan.
We should point out there are many listeners in Vermont that listen to this program who do not want to do it.
Yeah, so it wasn't everybody. Right. I just mean right. it was over 50%.
Yeah, it was It was something that was politically popular in the state.
Yeah, very politically popular, and these people were trying to really work this out. And they had promised people that it was going to be cheaper, that it was going to be affordable, that it was all going to be great. 2 days later, December 17th, 2014... Shumlin, a Democrat who had been swept into office promising a health care system that left no one uninsured, announced that he was giving up. He said it was the greatest political disappointment in his life. Now, Green Mountain Care was the health system that Vermont came up with. Green Mountain Care, the single-payer effort. And it started in euphoria. Everybody was excited in 2011. By 2014, it was, can we land this thing in the trees? That's 3 years. Now, why is it nobody's talking about what happened? Here's what happened. They went into publicly financed health care, and Vermont had optimal conditions. Okay, it's not like Vermont is, you know, loaded with, you know, inner cities of poor people. And, you know, it's just it's Vermont, for the love of Pete. Okay. Yeah. And maybe somebody is like, I had too much maple syrup and I just really don't feel well. It was the optimal circumstance if healthcare was going to last. Advocates at the time shared a belief that borders on the theological, that's according to a report, that such a system would save money. One analyst put it, even though no one knew what it would cost when they passed in Vermont, they just knew it would save money. That belief would prove to be naive. The choices that Shumlin favored would essentially have doubled Vermont's budget. Think of that. We're talking now about universal health care in the United States. In Vermont, when they tried it, it would have doubled the budget. And it would have raised state income taxes almost 10%, 9.5, plus an 11.5 payroll tax. So you have businesses on every employee charged 11.5% more, and every income taxed 9.5% more. And they still couldn't make it work. Shumlin said it would pose a risk of economic shock. You would no longer have private health care, but it would pose economic shock. The dozens of decisions the governor's team made in designing the system, what benefits to include, whom to cover, and the amount of out-of-pocket cost required trade-offs with big winners and losers. Quote, I see no evidence from the Medicare for All advocacy community of a serious effort to understand and learn from the lessons from Vermont's failure. Who said this? John McDonough. He was the senior aide to Senator Ed Kennedy. Okay, so Ted Kennedy's boy is like, I just want you to know, this didn't work out. And I don't see anybody actually looking at what this failure means. Okay, so we can use this as a stat. Hey,
well, universal health care, you know, it didn't work in Vermont. Well, there's lots of reasons it didn't work. You're probably one of those people that say Venezuela was socialist.
Yes, because it was and is. Here is what we need to learn. Not another talking point. What we need to learn is, why don't states do this? If everybody in the political world is convinced this works, for instance, if Texas is, you know, cutting edge on a lot of stuff, not on big government programs, but if Texas felt that they could save everybody a buttload of money, cover everybody, it would be better for the health of the state, the health of the people. It would be an attractive thing for business. They'd do it in a heartbeat. Would you agree with that? If it made sense.
Well, I mean, I think there's a principal issue here as well.
Yeah,
but I understand what you're saying. I mean,
I think you could convince Texans to break that principle. I mean, look how, maybe not 20 years ago, but today, we're close enough to a blue line here in Texas that I think you could get that over.
If it was, let's say it was working incredibly well all over the country.
Yeah, if Vermont would have made it work, and
right,
it was saving business and the state money, they would do it in a heartbeat.
This is the concept of federalism, right?
Correct.
Vermont
Correct.
Tries it out, sees what they can do. They take the risk, and if it works, then everyone can copy them.
So why is it that everybody in Washington is convinced that this is going to save money, it's going to be good for business, it's going to be good for people, everybody's going to love it,
mm-hmm,
and it will work? Why is it they don't try it on the state level?
Huh. Well, I mean, they did once here with Vermont,
mm-hmm,
but why isn't every blue state attempting this? Why?
Why? Okay, you could learn from Vermont, and you could say, okay, well, Vermont didn't do this and this and this, so let's try it.
As we know, socialism just hasn't been tried correctly yet.
Correct.
They did it the wrong way last time. We here in in Maryland can do it right.
Correct. Why don't they do it? Why the rush to take it out of a lab and try it directly on the patient? We don't do that with drugs, do we? We don't say, no, really, seriously, this is going to cure cancer. This is going to be revolutionary. It's going to cure cancer. We don't inject that into a body, do we? We try it first on a rat, then maybe a bunny rabbit. And then we work our way up, and then we do blind tests. We do all kinds of tests with small little groups. Why? Because we don't want to just start injecting people with something that could kill them.
Even when they're on the verge of death.
Right.
We say,
don't do that.
I mean, one of the things Trump did was the right to try that just happened.
Okay. So we don't do that. But why would we do that to the body of America? Why would we just forget the lab tests, forget trying it on little states, forget trying it in communities? Let's just inject with this new cure for cancer. Why?
To reset here, Vermont tried to do single payer, and this is, if you were going to do single payer in a state it was going to work, this is the best place you could have possibly done it. Has some of the nation's healthiest residents with some of the lowest rates of uninsured. It's small and homogeneous. It shares a border with Canada, put an existing single payer system within sight. And it has just one main insurer, the nonprofit Blue Cross Blue Shield of Vermont, repeatedly ranked the most efficient Blue Cross Blue Shield plan in the nation. So they didn't have much work to do here. This was an easy one. This isn't like a difficult state where there's a lot of people uninsured or a lot of poorer residents that didn't have insurance. This is the easiest state you could have tried this in, and it still failed in
miserably,
a catastrophic fashion.
Catastrophic way. Catastrophic failure. So why isn't anybody studying this? Sincerely, why isn't anybody studying this? Why isn't, if you're serious about healthcare, why are you not up there and looking at everything and going, where did it go wrong?
And let's correct those little tiny issues with our wonderful plan and move it to Maryland.
Where?
Or somewhere else.
Or somewhere else.
Huh.
Even if the feds were doing it, if they were serious, why wouldn't you be examining this and going, where did you go wrong? Where did you go wrong? What can you, did you try this? Did you try this? Here's why states don't do it. And the reason why is there's one thing states cannot do. Against the law, states cannot do it. and it stops universal health care from happening. I know you know it, Stu.
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
They can't print money.
Exactly right. So what happened in Vermont is the governor said, can we get any federal bailouts? Can we get federal money for this? Well, they missed a deadline. They couldn't get the paperwork in time. Federal government, they didn't know if that money was coming. Well, they couldn't put the state at risk and promise money that may not come.
So now, they couldn't do it on their own.
So now, wait, where would the federal government have gotten that money? The same place that Donald Trump yesterday found an additional $500 billion. Under Obama, our yearly budget was about $2 trillion. Yesterday, President Obama, Nancy Pelosi, and Chuck Schumer okayed a $2 trillion spending package for infrastructure. For infrastructure, three times the size of Obama's infrastructure package. Three times, $2 trillion.
No more Chuck and Nancy meetings, please. Right. No more Chuck and Nancy meetings.
So where do we get that money? We print it. There is a new monetary theory that is going around.
I would call it modern, Glenn. It's a modern monetary theory, MMT. Okay.
MMT.
What they call it.
This is really its name.
Oh, yeah.
Modern monetary theory. And they're only saying it's modern because, well, if they tell the truth, this is as old as the dirt. But if you say it's modern, it's progressive. It's something new. You know, like when you would see Tide with new flavor crystals or whatever it is for the Tide, when they say new, it's really not new. Really not. It's not. It's just packaging. The new monetary theory. Stu, can you explain this theory in a way that it makes any kind of sense?
I mean, it's going to, we have approximately 30 seconds here, and it's going to be longer than that, but to kind of summarize, it's basically printing money with no restriction. And like, there's not whenever a company is going to go bad, you've seen this happen in China a lot. Whenever a company is going to go bad or it's going to go bankrupt, the federal government just infuses them with capital, printed money, that brings them back to life for another year until next time they go bad. And then they infuse them with more money. Mm-hmm. And the idea is you're always raising it up. And the fear of getting to a point where we're too far into debt is completely overblown. It's not really a thing. And people just don't understand that. MMT solves that problem. There's no more, we're going to cut the budget. There's no more austerity measures. There's none of that.
There's
you
no
just
need
keep
to.
printing, whatever you need.
Under modern monetary theory, there's no stopping the printing press. You want something? Buy it. No big deal. You don't need gold. You don't need anything. You just print it. Now, I hate to say that this has been tried before, but that was old monetary theory.
No, not the modern one?
Yeah,
The old-timey,
just turn on a printing press. That's the old-timey monetary theory. And that ends in Zimbabwe, that ends in the Weimar, that ends in Venezuela. But you notice Venezuela, V, Weimar, W. What was the other one that I just said? In Africa, Zimbabwe. Z,
mm-hmm.
V, W, Z. I mean, that's all at the end of the alphabet. We're not even using those letters anymore. Those are old, outdated letters, okay? Of course those didn't work. Those were old, outdated theories and old, outdated countries. This is new. This is modern monetary theory. It's not printing money. It's digitizing money. We're just moving digits around. And there's no end to the money. You don't have to earn it. This is new. This is modern. This is a death sentence, and it's coming.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.